is Mr. Malachi Z. York.
This is McCool, Chief Black Thunderbird Eagle, Chief of Yamassee Native American Moors of the Creek Nation. I am presently incarcerated in Jones County Jail. It is March the 2nd, 2004, and I'm making this tape to clear up some discrepancies in our tribe, the Yamassee Native American Moors of the Creek Nation.
Okay. Now, do I have permission to tape this interview?
Yes, you have permission to tape my interview.
Okay.
And to make it publicly known what I'm saying.
Okay. There are some CDs circulating with other interviews and other conversations that you've done. What is your position on that?
Well, what happened initially, we did these interviews, and I was talking to people from the Atlanta Gossip, and I gave them permission at first, and then the lawyer told us, stop, don't put that out because it could be used against us. And so I told them, I spoke directly to Terry Bodie, and I spoke to her father, and I told them, do not put the tapes out. She promised me over the telephone she would not release these tapes. And about a couple of days later, I started receiving letters from different people from Tennessee and different states where they said they heard the tape and they liked the tape. It was good that I made the tape. And I called in, she told me again she hadn't put the tape out. Then I heard from another person a letter that the tape was on, some of the tape was on the internet. And they put it up there with hip-hop music behind it, so I called again. I said, she said, she promised me again. I said, it's not about a money thing, right? Because this person was going to put it out, I figured it would help her paper and get started because she was trying to get the Atlanta Gossip started. You know, and we've been friends for a long time, so I figured I could trust her. And I said, well, you know, you can put this out, and this will help you get your paper printed. And everything, I told her to go to the office, get me know the people, because the paper she would send me, to me, it needed better layouts, get our offices more professional about it. And so I told them not to do it, but they did it anyway.
Okay.
I'm very disappointed about that.
Okay. There's also been some recent arrests and incarcerations of people that are claiming to be Yamassee, Native American Moors of the Creek Nation. Are they members of your tribe?
Well, we think that's quite convenient that all this time we've been down here since 1993, we don't have all these things. But in the middle of this case, in the middle of the sentencing, in the middle of the trial, people started doing a bunch of crazy things out of nowhere and calling themselves Yamassee, Native American Moors of the Creek Nation. I'm not saying that these people have not been on the land. I'm not saying these people may not have joined one of the many branches of our organization. But by tribe, I know for a fact that the dog was mentioned, a dog, a pit bull was shot, and that marijuana was supposed to be involved. The Wapians, or the Wapians of the Yamassee Native American Moors of the Creek Nation, we do not drink alcohol, we do not drink cigarettes, we do not smoke cigarettes, we do not smoke marijuana, we do not use any kind of drugs, nor do we have what we call gins or dogs around our house. We must have old culture called Ansar-Allah, when we never had dogs around our house. Also,
yes.
Them people are making those claims, so I know for one that the girl whose name was mentioned on television, who we know is from the Navajo tribe, mm-hmm. and the two fellas, I don't know who they are, but I was told that they belong to the Washita tribe of number 215, I think they call themselves Mount Arafat, and they're under a chief, Latif, and they're also called Nuwapians, but I am not over them, I am not their chief. There are many Nuwapians. I am not the chief or leader of all Nuwapians. There's Nuwapians all over the place. There's some Muslims, some Christians, some Yoruba, and some atheists, for that matter. And I'm not the leader of all Nuwapians, nor am I the leader of the whole organization of Nuwapians worldwide.
Okay. Now, what is the purpose of you putting this tape out today?
Right now, to rectify the mistakes that's going on. There's a lot of gossip and slander going on about parties taking place during the trial and stuff that the devil's doing to cause problems in our tribe. They're doing it now because we have the devil by the tail, and some of his helpers, whether they be black devils or white devils, would like to release him. You follow? And he's getting into the hearts of people, and they're letting the demon mammoth called money in the Bible rule their emotions, and they're now mad at our office, slandering the office, and all kinds of different things just because they was making a couple of pennies off of me. And they pretended they was concerned with my release, when in actuality, they saw an opportunity to make some quick money. And it's a very sad thing, because it makes them just as bad as the people who went up and lied on me and put together this plot.
Right. Well, I appreciate your call. This interview that they're about to hear is predated. It actually took place before the trial.
That's it.
Right.
And we're going to do a tape after that whenever y'all are ready.
Okay. Hello?
Yes.
Yes, is this Mr. Malachi Z. York?
This is McCool, Chief Black Thunderbird Eagle, Chief of Yamassee Native American Moors of the Creek Nation, BIA registry number 208/1999. That is when we registered with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Our Constitution of Declaration of Indigenous Status has already been in existence since 1992. Yes, but they refer to me sometimes as Malachi, and even to insult me, Dwight.
So are you saying you were never, your arrest, the name that you were arrested under, Dwight York, is not your name?
That's not my name. And the birth certificate that was issued to me in Roxbury, Massachusetts, as a Massachusetts Indian, by the way, was under the name York. There was no first name on it at all. And that birth certificate is available in several books that I've written, copies of it with its number, so it can be verified.
And has your genealogy been verified by certified genealogists?
That's correct. We had someone from the Cherokee tribe who's a genealogist. I can't read her name off because, like I said, I've been tortured, so I've been deprived of the right to get to these things. I was only allowed telephone communication within the last couple of months. But yes, I had a Mrs. Robbie Hibner have that investigated for me. They did a genealogy chart, checked back from me to my mother and my father, my grandfather, which is William York and Carrie. And it went all the way back to Margaret, and then it went straight back to Ben York and the Lewis and Clark expedition, showing that that's the Moorish side of our family, but this Ben York also married Anna Maria of the Washa, a Washa woman that made us Washita, who's under that number, we're 215, 1992, if I'm not mistaken. That's now, our registry number, BIAM.
Okay, now you mentioned just a few minutes ago about torture.
Yes.
When you were first arrested, you went to the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, is that correct?
That is correct.
And is that where the torture began?
It began before that.
Okay.
It began at the arrest. I have witnesses to it. It began in the Baldwin County Mall, shopping mall in open daylight, with them knocking out the windows of a car with the butts of their guns, dragging three females as well as myself out on the floor into the glass in the streets. You follow?
Yes.
And they attempted to arrest us. Nothing on that arrest warrant, to my knowledge, ever referred to me as a dangerous person, never referred to me as an armed person or armed and extremely dangerous, which would have caused for such an overuse of force in the presence of a Sheriff Matthew from Baldwin County, who stood right there and watched all this abuse.
Now,
that's where the torture started.
Okay, and how many arresting officers were there at that time?
I couldn't see, because I was hit so fast. I was hit so fast and hit to the ground so fast. It was keeping the guns poked at me from every direction. I wasn't allowed to look up, don't look up, don't look up, don't look up. But I did notice as I was being dragged out the car, I looked to my right, I did see Sheriff Massey from Baldwin County standing there.
Now you, I've read in many articles that you suffer from a condition called hereditary angioedema.
That's correct.
Now, were you given your medicine at any time?
And they was informed from the time I was arrested, I'm on medication, and that I have a chronic disease that 30% of the people that have it die. Right, especially, and it's really activated from aggravation, frustration, and tension, which couldn't be more expressed by the way we were being harassed and, you know, attacked on the streets there in Baldwin. So when I got up to Atlanta, which is the worst prison in the whole state of Georgia, which has been admitted in the newspapers, right, we told them I needed my medication, that I need this, and they wouldn't give it to me. I kept telling them I need medication. I told them what I had. They couldn't give it to me. Doctors were there. They had no idea what angioedema was. So he was running around, a Filipino doctor, an Ethiopian doctor, a Latino doctor. They didn't know what to do, and they wouldn't do nothing about it, that's for sure. So I got locked into a cell, me and three other men. One of them's name happened to be Byron Pitt, so I happened to learn that he helped to save my life, in fact, because I was sleeping on the floor. One guy was sleeping on a bunk, another one was sleeping on another bunk, another one was sleeping under the bunk in a two-man cell up there. Rats, roaches, filth, you know what I mean? I mean, it's a mess. You know, I mean, the dietary is wrong, the clean, the clothes, they don't get fresh clothes, they're not allowed. The telephone is like 5 minutes, you know, before they cut you off, and you only get that twice a week. You don't really get no access to a library to fight your case. Lawyers are ignoring people and not responding. God and them never showed up there except once to visit when they want to talk about money. You follow that?
Yeah.
Never to really go over the case. They send some young kid up there called Charles who would come up there and talk about history and nothing about the case. You follow?
And that's from Garland's firm.
That was from the Garland and Lowe firm.
Okay. Now, I want to go back just briefly to the medical condition.
Yes.
Do you have your own private physician, and was he allowed to see you at that time?
Yes, I have a private physician who's been my doctor for over 10 years, Dr. William Thompson. And no, he was not given the right to see me. He was blocked. And he called every day, on the hour, and we have a report of it. However, a strange thing happened. When I got transferred over here to Jones County recently, right, after
yes.
almost 2 years of this humiliation, there's another inmate here called Gary C. Tatum,
right,
who's also classified as a Yamasee Native American Moor of our tribe, and an Arabian, by the way. Right? Dr. Thompson, the same doctor, my doctor, came out here, and they called Mr. Tatum out. They didn't say a doctor was here to see him. They just told him to go out there to the front desk. When he got out there, he saw Dr. William Thompson for the first time. The point I'm making, he had access to my doctor, but I wasn't allowed to get access to my personal doctor for over 2 years.
Right.
The officer involved in that was an officer called Mr. Wood, an officer called Mr. Lovett, right, and another one called Kent here.
Mm-hmm.
But this place who has an obsession with making me uncomfortable. Right?
Right.
And so they came to me, Mr. Wood and Mr. Lovett came to my cell, A4 at the time, and asked me, do I want to go out and see a doctor? Well, I couldn't say yes because I had recently filed a suit against the doctors of this particular institution. So I wasn't going to go out there and put myself in their hands knowing I just sued them. You follow?
Right.
And so now I was caught between a rock and a hard place. But he never told me my doctor was out there waiting to see me. He asked me, do you want to go see a doctor or go to a hospital? And I said, no. And he said, could you please write and sign that down? And I said, yes. At this point, no. And I signed that down. And I put under duress under it to let him know I know I'm being set up. Only later to find out from a letter from my doctor that he had asked the Officer Wood out there, does Mr. York know it's me out there? And Officer Wood lied and told him, yes, Mr. York knows you. He doesn't want to see you. Outright lie. We have the record. We documented it. And Mr. Tatum also signed his document to verify that he was allowed to see him physically in one day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of tortures I've been going through.
Now, it was just passed on to me. There's been letters that were sent from the Department of Justice and the Bureau of Prisons in regards to your medical condition.
Right.
And it states that it's acute hereditary angioedema.
That's correct.
Now, when you went in, it was just hereditary angioedema.
Right. Well, the conditions, the way I've been treated, I've been hoodwinked, I've been shoved, I've been pushed, I've been handcuffed, I've been shackled. I was shackled to a bed in New York with a black bag over my head by one Caucasian officer who doesn't let the other officers know what he's doing to the inmates up there in 10 South. He walks around with a grin. When other officers walk out, he changes into this demon and does all this demonic stuff to people. Right? Yes.
Okay. Now, you're the only person that's witnessed, I guess, along with Byron Pitts and some of the other inmates that have been there in the facilities with you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel the reason is why you're going through such torturous treatment and things of that nature?
Well, first of all, because they know who I am. They know I'm the chief of Native American War. They know that the whole state of Georgia belongs to my tribe and has since 1715, the Yamasee War. They never expected us to ever stand up again and claim our indigenous status. When I stood up and claimed my indigenous status, the first chance I could really do it was in the small courts of Putnam County by using the word secure party, just to keep the court off balance until I got to the federal court, where on June 30th, I made it very clear who I am. I made a declaration of my indigenous status, me and my tribe, our number, 208, and they knew that if this jurisdiction goes through, they have no authority over a large group of people that they were calling the Nawapian religious cult, which was really a Native American tribe, and only the Nawapian part of it was the Masonic Lodge. And they were bending the words, twisting the things to the public, to the media, because certainly those media outlets are working directly with them to deceive the public into the point, the impression they're trying to give,
right,
as opposed to the truth.
Now, that was a June 30th court date, is that right?
That's correct.
And after that, after you made that declaration, that is when your defense or the defense attorneys that you very eloquently stated you never hired.
That's correct.
Stood up and then wanted to do a competency hearing. Could you explain that?
I don't know why, because I had already been evaluated by Garland's own personal clan of psychiatrists under Dr. Eldridge, which is very important. I mentioned that. You know why? Because recently in a paper, Mr. Rob Peach, I think the day before yesterday, right, mentions in there that a psychiatrist told him that I didn't want to work with the Garland family. I didn't trust them, that I knew they was working with SEALs. Meanwhile, a judge the other day in court, Judge Ashley Royal, made a statement that he thinks the letter that I put in to start the proceedings for filing against this firm, the Garland Law Firm, for ineffective counsel, assistance to counsel, he said he thinks it's a ploy that I just started that day. And then the following day, make it clear that Rob Peacher comes out with an article stating that he heard it from a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist he's talking about was Dr. Eldridge, and she gave me her so-called evaluation while I was incarcerated in Fort Baldwin County. That's before I even got to New York to be evaluated by the New York City Psychiatric Department. So already heard me say I didn't trust him before the so-called,
dismissal
agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Before, I already said I don't trust him, I don't want to work with them. And they just kept hiding. They actually shackled me and made me come out to the phone. They would actually come to me and put me in shackles and drive me to the phone and talk to God, while he reiterates, you must take a plea. It's better for you to take a plea. You know, since you're suffering like this, you're facing 1,000 years. I'll never be able to win this case. I've had cases like this before. Why do you let these other girls suffer? Why do you know these people suffer? Don't think about yourself. If you was my son, that I would do this for you, I would tell you to do this. He was working all the time with them, and I knew it. Because I knew they had no case. I knew there was no such thing in those videos. I knew the witness they talked about. I knew this was all a big plot. And he didn't want to fight this case because he was made a deal with them. Took over $1.5 million, as I'm told by my sister, in cash money from our tribe, and flaunted it and didn't even use it. Never intended on having a trial, but intended to put their bogus plea. But they knew I wasn't going to take a plea, so they had to torture me into taking a plea.
Now, in that torture, you were, what was the experience that you learned of the other co-defendants?
I was told that they were being treated the same way I'm treated. That means I was sleeping on a concrete floor with real poor, bad food, wasn't getting my medication, watching rats and roach bugs and stuff, in the midst of very dangerous criminals, broke gallery, fights breaking out, people getting stabbed, suicides. I watched 4 or 5 people commit suicide. I was caught up in the middle of a riot up in Atlanta, and some guy hung, some Italian guy from the mafia, supposed to hung himself. There was a riot between the Florida boys and the Georgia boys. All this is going on, and the black Muslims of, you know what I mean? And I said, yeah, these kids are subject to that. I knew the sheriff, how Richard Seals, right, got names for these two young ladies, which is Sandra Lamkin and Khadija Merritt, out of an AEO magazine that we put out. That's the only people in this case involved 3 people that's in a magazine. That's where he got the names from. He got Johnson's name because Kathy Johnson is standing behind me in the magazine while we're advertising Egyptian attire for our lodge. These other two girls are being in there described as having, looking exactly a replica to ancient Egyptian deities, right? So that's where he got the Sandra Lamkin, Khadija Merritt, and Kathy Johnson to put the case. And he figured they'll torture them. If I think they're tortured, I know that Kathy's suffering from MS, which is a very, very dangerous disease. I said, they're not giving me my medicine. Hers is brain deteriorating. She'll be crippled for life. They used that, not to mention starvation, sleep degradation, where they kept waking me up, no allowance of telephone calls, interfering with my mail, definitely a poor diet, a whole bunch of things, and just outright vulgar and physical abuse.
Now, prior to this so-called agreement that was given to you,
yes.
What was told to you that about the other co-defendants during this whole torturous experience?
They told me that those people would go home free, totally free. There'd be nothing to be all over with, and you'd be the one that bears the burden. Because after all, you're the trophy that Putnam County wants. The state of Georgia wants you. That's it. The land, they'll leave their people in those land alone, and everything would go away.
Honor and respect. It just said that there's one more minute for your call, but I do have more questions and would like for you to call back if that's at all possible.
I'll call back.
Okay.
Thank
I'm going to hang up now. Yes. Hello?
Hello. You have a collect call from
Malachi.
Hello?
Rahobat.
Maku, Chief Black Thunderbird Eagle. We left off at discussing the plea agreements.
Yes.
Now, within these agreements that you were tortured into taking,
right,
was the 476 acres of land, and I think I also heard of an exuberant amount of money that was taken during the raid.
Right.
Were those all mentioned in this plea agreement?
I never got a chance to read the plea agreement. Mm-hmm. That was the whole thing. They kept me under the pressure and scrutiny of their psychiatrist over the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
And then took me back to the cell around 4 or 5, and then called me back out at 6 before I could even get back to get to sleep. And then started with the plea agreement. I never read the papers. I never knew nothing about the papers. It's like the PSR or PSI, whatever they call it. I didn't know anything about none of that stuff. They had already had this thing planned. I know that when they did jump down on those people's land, and the land was verified as theirs and not mine by a judge in Putnam County, I think Hugh Winfield,
75 Maryville in Athens County, Athens, Georgia, Clark County, where I live, where I'm registered. They took money out of my private money out of my house, which is legal.
Right.
If I know they didn't find no weapons, they didn't find nothing that would implement me. And if they did find anything in my house, then it was put in there by Abigail Washington, who was taking care of that house.
So you are registered to vote, and your legal residence is Athens, Clark County?
Clark County. I'm registered to vote. I voted in Clark County. I'm registered when I purchased that house at 155 Mansfield. They asked me my nationality. I made it clear then I was a Native American. It wasn't something I came up with overnight.
Right. And in going on, just moving forward within this time period, that was January 24th of 2002 that that you were tortured and taking these plea agreements. Now, you were imprisoned all the way up and currently still incarcerated,
yeah,
all the way up until May 29th was a sentencing date?
Yes.
Now, at that point in time, were you given any indication or anything going on with your case from any of your attorneys between January 24th?
I wasn't getting no communication from the Garland firm. Every now and then, they would send a little guy in called Charles. And he would actually discuss the Bible and history with me. Nothing to do with that. He was trying to get those guys. He would not even go into, anything with the case. Garland made it clear that he didn't think he could beat this case. And I was like, it's time to get rid of him. After he had taken $1.5 million from our tribe, he was ready to sign over an agreement, which his firm is known for, selling agreements and selling people out.
Hmm.
I told him from day one, I did not trust him. Then the judge tried to claim the other day that this is some new idea and proven, but that was proven false the following day by Mr. Rob Peters in his own article, where he states very clearly that Malachi told the psychiatrist way back that he did not trust Garland. He said he was working with seals. So if that's true, then the letter I issued to the judge the other morning in downstairs in a private meeting, because he didn't want to hear it in the public because he was afraid of its implications, that he made his own personal assumption that this is something I feel you did. This is a ploy you're doing. How is that possible if I had already told a legally recognized Georgia State psychiatrist that I didn't trust the man, and it's on their records?
So, okay, on May 28th, that is when I was reading in the articles that a meeting had taken place between the judge, the Garland firm, and the prosecution. Now, were you present at that meeting?
I was not, but I found out later I was supposed to have been, but I was not present. He went on and moved with a plea agreement, a whole bunch of different things I didn't know nothing about. All I knew is they were telling me, you're going to plead guilty so you can get these people out and you're going to get your medication. You'll be put in a nice facility as an old man where you can, you'll still be able to write your books and do the things you do. But those people, those young women and Kathy Johnson will be free. It'll all be over with. No details were given to me about anything. I'd never been into the situation before. And I never understood what was going on about this here case. I didn't understand how the federal system works. I didn't understand about pleas. I didn't understand about none of this stuff, about what they call conspiracies and all that kind of stuff, let alone RICO. These are all new words. That's only television terms to me.
Right. Now, in that meeting, it was brought to my attention that the prosecution was wanting to drop three charges just to get the plea.
Right. That's what I heard. They were going to drop the charges. Now, so they came to the court with the intent to drop the charges. Mr. Lawson didn't want that to happen because Mr. Lawson, of course, working with the system also, was trying to prevent the indigenous status, and they want to take those and lock the, of course, me away as an author and block the doctrine I propagate forever. So they blocked Mr. Moultrie and Mr. Wood, who was there, from put into the court, put before the court that they must respond to it, and they would just actually ignore motions like they never existed. And some motions, they actually transform the motion from one name and put the U.S. government on it so they can hide the motion that was pointing out that Mr. Moultrie and them had to present if they had any more intention of sabotaging or what they call ambushing, they're going to have any more charges, there's any more thing, and they hid that there, and to this day, it wouldn't address it. And to the other day, mentioned in court, it was brought up again by Mr. Patrick Adams, a new attorney on the case, and they're avoiding it. They avoid jurisdiction, they avoid the most important issues while they're pursuing their own endeavor, their own quest, I should say, to try to overthrow a tribe.
Right. Now,
Georgia is one of the few states that won't recognize Native Americans or American Indians. Every other state in the doggone country has recognized them. Georgia's fighting with everything they can to keep this as a Confederate state.
Because I noticed that you've been incarcerated for over 2 years now.
That's right.
And the trial is just now coming up to this January 5th, this hearing, or the January 5th trial date. Now, up until that time period, even going into New York, you were sent to New York for a competency evaluation.
Yes.
But in reading the rules that they used in regards to that, it was a rule that the prosecution usually uses.
Yes.
And basically, when you went to New York, what type of treatment were you met with there?
Well, I was put in what they call 9 South first, which I thought was orientation. Now, I came in the day of the blackout, so the whole prison was shut down. Right?
Right.
I came with a bunch of inmates. They had us locked in a dark room where nobody could even see each other, so anything could happen to anybody. Because the whole New York City was out.
Right.
Then they kept us there overnight. They gave us a sandwich. They couldn't even let us fill out the paperwork that night because there was no light. Eventually, some generators came on. I don't know what fun it was. And they started bringing us out one by one. The doctors was asking us questions about our medical condition. All right, that's when they noticed my breathing condition and added back on my childhood asthma was added back on, a condition brought out because of the conditions I was in. No air, locked down there in New York in a tomb with no lights and no circulation. We couldn't breathe. So that made me have that breathing problem again. Now I'm back on with asthma medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was put in a cell in 9 South with a Latino guy who's already been found guilty, right? You see, I can't say he's a cruel person. No problem. We talked him up. But the place was filthy. Rats were there, holes in the wall. I spoke to a man, I can't think of his name. He's supposed to be the counselor there. A little short Puerto Rican man. He laughs. He thinks it's funny, the condition. We say there's rats in there. Yeah, well, everybody knows rats in New York. There's water, but this place is filthy. There's mildew in the wall. It's just dangerous. Well, everybody knows that. It's okay. So that went on for a while. They kept me down there. I can't remember exactly. Like I say, they knock out your days and nights by putting you in the corners and places where you can't see. And then from there, all of a sudden, out of the purple sky, they put an Arab in my cell from Morocco. Some Arab guy. They know in my records it says that me and Arabs don't... that I've written. You follow? So they endanger my life by putting a Moroccan in my cell. Then within 2 days, they sort of with no violence going to happen there, they transfer me up to 10 South where they have all the terrorists at. Right? They take me there. They take me there. They don't say nothing. Don't question us. Don't look at us. Don't say nothing to us. And they throw you in a cell. And that's it. Some Caucasian guy comes back there and says, you don't talk to no other officers. You only talk to me. If you want anything, you say it to me. And they just lock you in the room. There's nothing in the room. You can't see outside. And it's a concrete bed and a concrete death. Eventually, when all the black officers would leave, then he'd come back and he'd handcuff you down and put a black bag on your head at nighttime. And then when the shifts, something must be going on out there, then he'd come and take it off your body and say, you better not say nothing to anybody about this, or so. It went on like that. I don't know how many days I was up there. They stopped my mail, stopped my video, my visitation, stopped my telephone conversation, and then want to rush me back down by taking me to Oklahoma and bounce me back down to Georgia, back to Jones County, then rush me in the court.
Mm. And that's
I've
how you...
I've never been prepared. That's how I've been living.
Mm.
I've been living under those torturous conditions.
Now, this is the first... speaking of MCC New York, that's not the first facility where you were kept in conditions where you were separated and alone.
No, I was locked down in Jones Bell County in a medical cell, which was set up for people with tuberculosis. And the temperature was like 107 degrees all the time. Couldn't breathe. 2 doors locked in by myself. No windows, no nothing. Every time I haven't seen anything, is every now and then a person woke up, come by, a nurse or something. And a couple of officers were there, and they would stop, and they would come in and say, this room is too hot. They'd open the door. They'd say, this room is too hot. And a couple of officers would crack the second door so I could breathe, and the other officers would come and close the door. Then I was allowed to get out because I guess I passed out because they came through, and I found myself, they took me to a day room, which is not very big, about 10 by 10, and in that day room, there's about 5 of the guys. But I know these guys are very sickly looking, only to find out after talking to a couple of them, they were AIDS and tuberculosis patients. Locked in the same room, we use the same one telephone on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I had no choice. Use that telephone to take the chance or not get it. So I had to go to the phone. That's why I made some contact with outside, let them know what's going on. It was what happened to me in Jonesboro. It was Creighton County. Then, of course, I was bounced over to Putnam County from there. Anytime I would raise any question, I'd be bounced to a lower and lower and lower condition and more suffering and more torture. Abuse, pushing, shoving, cursing at you, calling your names. Who the heck you think you are? You ain't nothing. You have a whole bunch of vulgarities and all kinds of different things. You ain't nobody, just like any other nigga to us, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, throughout this incarceration, you've been held at about, from what you've stated today, about 5 or 6 locations.
About 5 or 6, yeah. They still bounce me, give me to bounce me to another one now, to Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
In the judge's environment, where he went to school and he practiced for 20 years, we pulled a jury of his peers, trying to, because they know by now that we have all the facts,
mm-hmm.
and they have no evidence. And they know we're about ready to beat this case, so now they're trying to put a curveball in this situation and hoodwink the public so the public won't know what's really going on. That's why they're trying to close the court. Because they thought they had me dead to rights. So that's what he's calling two kids underage. The other time he lies and speaks about a girl. And Mochi keeps getting up and lying to the judge, telling me that girl was 13 when we got our birth certificate and verified she was 14. It's outright lies. It's a conspiracy to try to destroy our tribe, take our land, and block our jurisdiction, our jurisdictional rights.
Right, and now throughout all that, throughout all the torture that you've been put through and things of that nature, now you're leading up to the court case, and it just seems from what I'm reading in the public is that they're trying to violate your constitutional rights by allotting you a fair trial.
That's right.
And that's what this Judge C. Ashley Royal wanting to close the courtroom.
That's right. That's
what's that about?
Not with my First Amendment right, my Sixth Amendment right, my Fifth Amendment right, I think it's my 14th Amendment right. He's just trying to close the trial because he don't want the public to hear this trial. He's lying. He's saying his daughter's to protect the children, but there's no children in the case. So that can't be the real reason. So now, you know, I mean, what is the real reason? To keep the public from hearing the truth. Well, we start presenting the videotapes we got, the pictures we got of these kids in their real nature, the fact, the letters we got, the actual witnesses we got who made affidavit responsible, was raised with them, who hung out with them. Not the four people they're talking about, or the five people they're talking about, but another 50 other people who was there, their mothers, their own mothers and fathers, their own brothers and sisters, who is willing to testify that these kids is a plot for money. People who was a part of the meeting when they had the plot planned, went to Florida with them. How Jake and them transported mines across the state line from Georgia, bringing them down to Florida just to set up the plot. They're trying to hide all these facts, and the judge was helping because it's an embarrassment to the state of Georgia that went through all of this to find out everything they was doing was a lie. It was all a big plot. They got tricked by a bunch of kids. But they're calling kids, of course, most of them in their 30s now, but they're calling them kids. It's embarrassment, so they'd rather let me fall and you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And save their butts, and we're not having it. That's why we're public. That's why it's on the internet. It's called www.unnm.com, and get the facts. Go up there or go to gopetition.com and go there, and you see the facts. It's up there.
Right. Now, you speak of the different things that have taken place throughout this whole entire time period. What do you think has led it to this point, and do you think the new RICO charges are an act to basically or punish you for wanting to use your Fifth Amendment
the,
right?
The RICO charges is because they realized that I did not own the property in Putnam County, and that the judge, Hugh Winfield, a judge called Hugh Winfield had released the property back to the original owners, which are the Evans and the Richardsons, right? And if now they got to come up with some RICO charges in order to figure out a way to control the money and keep the land, and it's a way of chastising me for having the audacity to fight them back.
Right. And you in fact retired in 1988.
That's
is that correct?
Correct. And Abigail Washington's father, Nathaniel Washington, became the president or leader of that organization. From then on, the vice president became Vincent Powell, and their secretary became somebody named it.
Now you've been you're speaking. These are legal organizations that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, I was a Nubian Islamic Hebrews Ansar Law Committee incorporated way back in Brooklyn. Yes, I retired in 1988.
Right.
I went about my business. And I formed the Egyptian Church of Kress. I went back and did a Masonic Lodge and set up a doctrine from there.